It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And if everything, you know, when I have to hook this up, it's by blind. You dial the numbers, you get the two lines together, and you do
really
it.
You really hope.
You do it, and you hope that it works out properly. We'll find out here in a second. Cynthia, are you there?
I'm here. Hello.
Janet, are you there?
Here.
All right, it worked.
Well, extraordinary.
It's like driving a car with blinders on. You just, as Don Martin used to say to me, you just load up the cart and let it go.
Well, it worked.
There's, you know, technology only goes so far. All right. Well, I think the first thing I want to talk about, and we'll get it out of line right away, is the nice supplement, Our Town section, that is in the journal this week.
I have to say that section is a little miracle in the sense that last year, in a moment of deep OCD, I said, you know, we should start Towns and Villages right now in August, because we hadn't really ever done a salute to the volunteer gardeners in all of our towns who do unbelievable work. And I think that people who aren't really following with great attention what's happening don't realize that it's not the town crew that's doing most of these beautification projects. It's women and men of all ages who come together and put in pansies and take out the pansies and put in purple coneflower and go out and weed and weed and weed and pull up things that are spreading. So August, of course, is a time when they are at peak volunteer mode. So we went out last year, we interviewed volunteer gardeners in all of the towns that we cover and got wonderful stories. And so we apologize because, of course, the world was very different last August. Things may be slightly different this year. However, I was out driving in Sharon yesterday morning and saw the ladies from the Sharon Garden Club hard at work on the median strip in the center of town. Like contractors, there may be moments when you drive by and see them without their masks on because they're, you know, it's hot. But they are practicing social distancing, of course, and doing their best to observe quarantine. But we love the photo that we got from Gail Tobin, who has been part of the volunteer mask-making group that's been supplying hospitals throughout the state. And she made an oversized mask and put it on her planter out in front of her house in Kent. And we're happy to have that picture. But we hope that this puts you in the mood for gardening. I was out at a garden center yesterday in Sharon. Unbelievable, the crowds that were out there. Just everybody right now wants to get their hands in the dirt, and you cannot get a zucchini plant or zucchini seeds anywhere in the region to save your life.
Well, while we're on the subject, I watched the tour of Bunny Williams' garden on Instagram, which was done in HD. Oh, my God. It was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anything like it in my life.
It's one of those things where it's like, people, don't try this at home. It's so that is a very work-intensive garden.
Oh.
You really have to. But, you know, you can we can aim high.
Yeah.
And even if you only did a 15th of what she's got at her incredible garden.
Well, the whole idea is to inspire people.
It was amazing.
That's why. So,
yeah, and yeah. I'd love to say about this piece, too, besides the gardens, which are amazing, and it was such an inspiration, Cynthia, had to do this and then update it for this year. There are the town resources lists in here, very useful all year long, and a wonderful piece on CSAs because, you know what, if you plant that garden and it doesn't work out just the way you thought it would, there are the CSAs in our area to get vegetables from all summer long.
All right. We'll go on to a picture on the front page of the Bard professor talking about COVID-19.
So it's an interesting dichotomy here. You can see the photo of Matthew Young, who's a professor at Bard, which is where my daughter went. And I will tell you, Bard is not a super right-wing organization. It's completely left-wing.
Lefty.
But so what they're studying is something that you might have felt with something you heard on like more conservative media. But what they're looking at is how effective the social quarantine has been and can there be a happy place in the middle so that, you know, if everybody is correct and that this is just the first March and that we're going to really get hit by this COVID in October when the flu season starts, as has happened with, I think, the Spanish flu happened in 1918, the question is going to be, can we tolerate this extreme level of quarantine again? So what they're doing is a study on mathematically how much the disease is being transmitted from person to person and whether the social distancing is helping or whether there's a more moderate alternative. And I'm going to also note there's an app called How We Feel. It's a national app, and they want everybody in America, if possible, to check in there every day and just say what your symptoms are, say whether you've been out, what kind of social distancing. It takes literally 15 seconds to do. And for every person who checks in, every time they check in, they donate a meal to the needy. So go on your app store. It's called HWF, How We Feel, and it's extremely helpful to help them figure out how we can possibly mitigate the return of this in October.
Okay. The stage is set now in both local state elections for us, as we have candidates on both the Republican and Democratic side for the 64th District, and also Craig Miner now has a challenger, the former mayor of New Milford.
That's right. And so Maria Horn, who is our state rep and incumbent and is running again, was just nominated by the Democratic Committee, which was not an enormous surprise to anybody. She's doing a fantastic job. And we had a profile on her and her opponent, very beloved local person, Brian Oler. For the 30th Senate seat, Craig Miner has been an incumbent for many years. He had been a state rep before that. Patrick Sullivan has actually had a hard time finding him, managed to get him on the phone over the weekend, and Craig said, yeah, I guess I'll run again. So we have the scoop. Craig Miner is running again, but he's running against David Grombach, who is the former mayor of New Milford. He used to own a bookstore in town with his wife, and so we have information on both of them. Sort of, a fairly different approach to representation, so do read those articles by Patrick.
And you also have a story by Patrick on the plans for the Connecticut August primaries.
And definitely read this. So the primary had originally been scheduled for June. Now it's scheduled for August. The state is setting it up so that everybody can get an absentee ballot. It used to be fairly strict on who could get a ballot before. But now everybody theoretically should be able to get one. But I believe you do have to apply. But for the details, look here. And also you can go to the Secretary of the State website through the ConnecticutCT.gov website.
And I'm glad that they're allowing this to continue, because I switched from an unaffiliated voter to a Democrat just so I could cast one last vote for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
So
right.
Now
I get my chance to do it.
Okay. Yeah, that's the ultimate sort of no you don't get to, right?
Bernie's still on the ballot.
Yeah, that's
right. What I mean.
So I get to I get a chance to do it anyway, even though it doesn't mean anything. It still makes me feel good. All right.
Yeah, I don't completely get why he's still on the ballot, but as it was explained,
running.
They've all been printed. That's why everything's all set, and they're not going to redo everything. That's why.
Well, the way the registrars put it was Bernie still trying to collect delegates because he wants to be able to influence what the party platform is going to be.
All right. Well.
So your vote won't be wasted.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, it wouldn't have been wasted anyways. You've got the story about the hair salons, and good news for the hair salons, I think, today is that they're part of Phase 2, which will open up on June 20th.
Right, and there had been an effort by a number of salon employees. I think there were 3,500 of them that joined together, and they were about to go march on Hartford on Friday. And a few hours before that, the governor issued a new statement saying, okay, they're not going to open May 20th, they'll open June 20th. And, of course, there's pretty strict social distancing regulations involved. But as I understand it, the stylists who were objecting to opening weren't really talking so much about the functional aspects of opening their salons. They were saying, you know, as so many people are saying at this moment, is I don't really feel safe going back to work and being exposed to people, and also I can't get child care right now. So delayed.
You know, what we did with the Bargain Barn is we polled all the workers, everybody who's an employee and a volunteer, and said, listen, the state gave us permission to open up if we meet these criteria, which we did. We self-certified and got the certification from the state. But we gave them the option if they wanted to come to work or not. If they didn't want to come to work, we still had PPE that was going to pay for another month. And then even after that, we would have picked up their salaries once again. A few of the volunteers, because they're older, decided to hold off for a while. But the three paid people, the three or four paid people, wanted to come back to work under the strict guidelines, which we had to put into effect at the Bargain Barn. So,
a lot of people really missing the Bargain Barn, I'll tell you.
And what's funny is the final things that we had to do weren't released until 2 days beforehand.
Yes.
But we got them all done anyway. So. It should be, if somebody's got a job and they're just not sure, they should be allowed not to come in until they feel safe.
It does seem like that should be the next executive order, is you can't fire somebody for not coming back and, you know, maybe set a reasonable amount of time. But I think that the concern that the stylists have would apply to a lot of different industries. And, you know, a lot of people are nervous about coming back.
Yeah.
Not just older people, but younger people who are now living at home with their parents and are concerned about infecting them.
Yeah.
Well, and the practicality of families going back to work before childcare or schools are open is mystifying.
And how about this is good news? I was notified by the Connecticut Broadcasters Association. The National Guard is going to stop by here next week and drop off masks for the radio station. They're going to every radio station in the state, and they're donating masks. So if we want to have people in the building, there'll be masks available.
That's great.
Yeah,
tell them to come over to the print media, get it from CBIA. We have been getting masks and gloves through them for free, so... No complaints here either.
No, it's really nice because, you know what? It does get expensive to supply those masks sooner or later.
Yeah.
Hey, no killing frost. We were close. It was 36 at my house this morning when I left.
Yeah, you know, the last little plants, I was tempted to put them out last week, and it was so beautiful. But and, you know, I was talking to Charlie Paley and Sharon yesterday, and he said they probably would have been safe, the plants that you put out. But I had already lost a bunch of tomatoes and cucumbers, so... specifically the fruit trees, because, of course, we won't really know until late summer, early autumn, whether the blooms were killed by the frost last week and the snow. Peter Montgomery, who's got the Heritage Heirloom Apple Orchard down in Warren, says he's checking his trees about 10 times a day, but he says it looks like they're probably going to come through. The blooms seem to maybe have a little bit of singeing around the edges, depending on where your trees are on your property, but we'll hope for a full crop of apples, peaches, pears, and other fruit this summer.
And you got a picture of a big black bear, and I know they're back because I posted on Facebook yesterday the two black bears that came up to my window at my house. One was a regular-sized bear, and the other one obviously has not missed any meals.
They're very bold right now. There was one just in the middle of the morning just trundling along my front lawn, and I live right in the middle of Lakeville, about one house away from Route 41, just wandering up my lawn, went in the yard, sniffed the lilacs, wandered over to the neighbor's house. So they're definitely back, and we have some reminders in there for people maybe who haven't been here at this time of year before. And actually, Ann Day had posted on her Instagram that, and Ann's pretty careful, and they had a garage freezer, and the bears broke into the garage, pulled the door off their freezer, took some food out, and then, you know, went out and made a mess in the yard. And Ann is upset because, of course, it's impossible to get a freezer right now.
Yeah.
They're back-ordered all the way through August. And I remember at the beginning of the quarantine, I was at Lindell's, and somebody said, oh, a guy just walked in and bought five, you know, large-size freezers. And I don't know if he was buying them for himself or he was going to sell them or if he was maybe giving them to one of the food pantries, but... That was a hint of some weird oversized hoarding that's going on.
All right, you've got a story.
But anyway, don't put stuff in your yard for the bears.
No, absolutely not. You've got a story about you're seeking recipes from area fundraisers.
Yes, thank you for pointing that out. So if you are listening and you have a nonprofit organization and you do some kind of an annual dinner, whether it's a chili dinner or pancake breakfast or the chicken roast, the pork tenderloin roast, the roast beef roast, whatever you do, we would love to get your recipe, even if it's just like, well, we just take a bunch of chicken and we throw it on the barbecue. Just send us that, because what we are hoping is we will remind people in the area who do really look forward to these fundraising meals that these meals probably won't be happening throughout the year. They're often very delicious. They're often made, you know, in bulk, so these are going to be large-scale recipes. We're not going to try and convert them down, but you can generally convert them down. If you know how to cook generally, you can figure out how to do, you know, the math on reducing them. But I think that people feel like, oh, it's not worth it to send a $10 check to, you know, the fire company or the ambulance or whatever. But think about it. If you're paying $10 for a meal and they're providing you with food, the $10 that you send to that organization is going to be twice as valuable because they're not providing you with any food. So definitely don't forget our nonprofits. And if you are a nonprofit, please do send me by email your recipe before June 11th. The sooner the better. We don't really know how many recipes we're going to get. We're hoping we'll get a lot, in which case whatever overflow we have we'll put on the Internet. But we think this is a really nice opportunity to remind people of these nice community builders that we do.
All right. We've got stories about budgets and everything, but I would like to get onto some other stories, too, and that is one out of Cornwall and one out of Sharon, both with issues that have been around before. Out of Cornwall, the spraying of the railroad, and out of Sharon, that large storage trailer.
So the spraying of the railroad tracks by the Housatonic Railroad Company has been an ongoing issue for years since Brian Oler was the state rep and introduced legislation saying, you know, that they couldn't do it. A lot of trees died along the railroad tracks. They're very unsightly. People in Cornwall would like those trees removed, and they also are supposed to be getting a written description from the railroad company of exactly what's going to be sprayed so that they can say, like, don't spray that area, that's residential. So that's ongoing, and I believe there's another meeting about it coming up this week. Then there's a trailer. So Drum Road is this very beautiful, bucolic little back road in Sharon, not far from Mudge Pond. And somebody's got a big storage trailer there that looks abandoned but is on private property, and it's stepping out about a foot into what's a very narrow road, and there's also a skid trailer. So the town is trying to work with, you know, I'm not sure that they ever passed that blight ordinance, but there is an ordinance for stuff being left and abandoned. It's not technically abandoned, so it's a tricky situation. But you would think that if all these meetings are going on, that the owner would kind of go like, oh, yeah, I guess I should do something with that. I think there's only three houses on that road or something. So ongoing, and just a reminder to everybody that just because you don't see it from your house doesn't mean your neighbors aren't seeing it. And then Gordon Ridgway, farmer, first selectman, CSA owner, and as Janet noted, in our towns and villages, we do have a list of CSA farms. We are only listing the ones that are still accepting new members because a lot of them are already filled up. They got their seeds in December. They may not have enough left to be able to do full shares. So look at our list. Gordon Ridgway is on there. He's also at the market, which is, I believe there's only one market in Cornwall this year. It's opening this weekend. The Kent market is also opening this weekend. So go to their town websites. I'll see information on that.
All right. And I did an interview with Gretchen yesterday. The Hotchkiss Library in Sharon can't do what they normally do, so they are really put together a lineup for the whole summer of these virtual author signings where you can get books and everything like that.
Right. So you pay a fee to sit in on the Zoom talk, and then you can order the book and get a signed copy. And they've got some very interesting authors, one of whom I was extremely excited about, which is Dan Leader, who is the founder creator of Bread Alone, which is this very high-end bakery but has, you know, bread at all of our local markets, really high-quality bread. And he's really a bread evangelist. And as people probably know, I've been obsessively trying to figure out how to make sourdough starter and bread and have just started to get it down. But so I'm interviewing Dan Leader today at 1 o'clock. We'll have him in next week's issue talking about his new book, a lot about heritage and heirloom and locally grained and grown and milled flour. And we're also going to have in Compass this coming week, May 28th, an article about Wild Hive Community Grain Project, which is, so if you're having trouble finding whole wheat flour or any other kind of, flour, you can actually go to Clint Corners and pick some up or order it by email. So we'll have information on that next week.
All right. We will go to the opinion pages and viewpoint pages. Once again, Peter Steiner is great. You have to think about it for a second. But the two horsemen in one of those boats, I can't wait till things get back to normal. It made me laugh. Maybe some young people won't get it. But
Well, yeah, I mean, none of us were alive when this was the norm, no. What Peter is drawing. Right. However, I think we can surmise what he's doing. And, you know, what a mind. It made me laugh, too.
All right. On your editorial, budgets are not boring. Absolutely.
I couldn't help but notice as we were going through the paper today, even, we were skipping those budget stories, but boy, are they important and more important now than ever. So, I give our towns a lot of credit for figuring out a way to be able to do the meetings so they will be open to the public. Anyone who can tap into these Zoom or, you know, whatever platform they're using for the meetings online, they can see what their elected officials are doing. And we have had reporters in those meetings, so we've been writing about them every single week. So if you don't have access to the Internet or you're not into doing that, by all means, just read the paper, and you can find out what your town is doing. It did have to change this year. We've been explaining how that has happened as far as how decisions are being made, and I talk about it here, too, but not an easy thing to figure out. And so we will have functioning municipalities and schools come next year because of this.
It's not often that I think New York thing does better things than Connecticut, but they're allowing people to write in and send in ballots on the ballot. And I just think that's a great idea. I just spoke with Ray Castellani from Weebatuck, and I think that's just a nice little addition there. But, hey, you know what? States had to do what they had to do. This has just been an untenable situation for everybody.
Well, and they had to do it on the fly. They had to make decisions in that moment, and I had to figure out exactly how they'd be able to handle it. Will this ever happen again? Let's hope not, but lots of lessons learned through this experience, and certainly one thing that we should have learned from this is that better internet access for all in the area should be a high priority.
Absolutely. On the Viewpoint page, and you've got lots of Viewpoint editorials or columns, and also lots of letters.
Lots of letters on all different topics. So we're happy to have them. Every single one is important. Do read them all and respond if you disagree with the letter writer.
All right. And turning back the pages, there's like four or five that I could choose from, but I'm going to choose the one 100 years ago. No more baseballs to be played by anybody, scholars or others, on the high school grounds on Sunday by order of the Board of Education.
Yeah, that was a funny one. Yeah.
Well, it's funny now, but, you know, it wasn't funny back then. I'm sure 100 years from now, people are going to look back at some of the things that happened here and say, what?
Exactly. No, not funny then. Yeah.
And I love the picture of the moose in the Cornwall woods.
How about that? Michael Motion, he wrote about it for us last week, and he was out with his dog, and he said, I tried to get a head-on photo, but I just couldn't get it together to get my, you know, camera situated. So I got it walking away. Incredible.
I think I'd rather prefer the side view than
having coming right at you.
Exactly.
Let's go on to Compass. We only have about 2 minutes left, and you have actually quite a few things in Compass.
Actually, let me very quickly take us to the OBIT page, because this is the first week when
Dusty,
we have had two COVID-related deaths. And so a reminder to people, the infection rate seems to have peaked, and although more people are getting tested, so the numbers will continue to rise just because more people are getting statistically counted. But after the peak of infections, they're expecting the death rate to increase. So, and one thing we're noticing in the obits that we've never really seen before is people generally don't say what a person died of. But right now, everybody's making a special point of saying, like, he died of congestive heart failure or Parkinson's disease. So right now we have two, and sad, of course, losses to COVID-19. One is Janet Gold from the iconic important Gold family in Cornwall, but also another big loss to the town of Cornwall was Dusty Sandmeyer, who had started Northwest Lumber. So in Compass, we have Laszlo Gyorsik, the brilliant photographer from Cornwall, doing a project where he comes and takes pictures of people at their homes. It's, you know, of course, it doesn't look that different because this is a rural area, so he's got a lot of people in their yards, but he's got beautiful portraits. They're on the Cornwall website, but he's also willing to come over and take more photos of people. Cornwall Library doing a very interesting series of talks, the very well-known, respected author Roxana Robinson talking about the novel Madame Bovary by Gustave Flaubert. She's doing three sessions on it. She teaches this at Hunter College in New York. She's an expert at teaching it. I've never liked this novel. I might tune in because I think she'll make me like it. Fred Baumgarten, I wouldn't say is a huge sports fan, but, you know, like so many of us, he's missing sports. So he created this funny game where you go online and you look for every different version of an aria or, any kind of a song. It could be a pop song, it could be classical, and you compare all the different versions and pick a winner. So Fred, very funny, and that's our Compass.
All right, and that is most of what we just touched on various stories and the editorial at the Lakeville Journal, tricornernews.com, also at your local places where you normally pick it up, and you can get it also by mail delivery as well. Stay safe, you guys, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. Once again, tricornernews.com on the web.